Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. The Move to Improve Challenge has officially begun. It is so cool to see so many people excited and moving together. They already did their self-assessments, got started on a couple days, and because you are here and you're listening, we're giving yet again another discount. So this is for our podcast listeners, not going out anywhere else. This is TOB20. Now this 20 gets you 20% off, which almost puts you at the early bird discount still. So if you haven't made the leap yet and gotten in, use TOB20 at checkout. Check out the link, which is docgenfit.com/move2022. And don't forget, you can still refer friends in. This hasn't ended yet. So if you want the refer your friends bonus prizes, which include the Gen app platform, the cash prize and the Optimal Body Therapy Kit, then refer your friends in and tell them to use TOB20 because this is their last opportunity to come in and learn with us.
So for this interview, we are welcoming back onto the podcast yet again, Andrew Dettelbach, who is first and foremost shirtless. You can go find him on Instagram as the.shirtlessdude. And he is a learner of all things movement, health, and mindfulness. Since the age of 5, he has had dozens of chronic pains, most notably a large bilateral disc herniation that he experienced in 2013. And we're going to talk through all of that. He learned about 4 years ago that he has a connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome that likely contributed to many of these injuries. He views all of the diagnoses and pains that he has experienced as a blessing to be able to help provide to others. He's built 2 fitness companies and created numerous online rehabilitative strength and conditioning and habit-forming programs that have positively impacted the lives of over 17,000 members. He's also built numerous social media accounts across various platforms, with the largest reaching 1.1 million followers, which allows him to provide helpful and fun information regarding health practices. Go check him out at the.shirtlessdude. So many incredible movement and health-based things that he is going to be able to share. So many incredible health and movement-based things that you would be able to implement in your lives. And it's so great, the interview coming up, the way he talks through pain and how he created the relationship with pain in his journey. Let's get to it. Andrew, thanks for taking the time to come back on with us again to interview and tell us a little bit about your journey and your journey through pain and how you are now using that to motivate and inspire a lot of other people in their own journeys.
Of course. I appreciate you guys having me. You know, we just did for those of you listening, we did a little double date last week and that was fun. So it's great to be on here to talk about some more work related stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think we're so fortunate in being able to do what we do in helping and empowering people, and anyone who knows, you know, your channel, which you guys can go look him up, the Shirtless Dude. Is that what it is, right?
It's like the.shirtlessdude. I couldn't get the Shirtless Dude.
Oh, dang it. Well, don't go to that guy then. Go to the.shirtlessdude so you can be highly inspired. But I think looking at your journey now can also be a little intimidating for people who are currently in pain. And so I think it's important to note that Andrew has had chronic pain since age 5. Age 5. That's wild. How do you even know what pain is at that age?
At that point, you don't even really know. It's just normal. So I think when you're that young and you're experiencing chronic pains, it's, you know, it's annoying and it's a nuisance. But for the most part, that's just kind of all I've known, is experiencing some sort of pain really on a weekly basis for my entire life, even up until today, which we can talk about later.
So what did that look like when you were in those younger ages, like 5 and moving on? And when was it that you started to realize, oh, this is something that I can address? Or did you work with somebody or have somebody tell you or have a conversation with somebody where they're like, hey, that's not exactly, quote, normal. We can maybe start trying to do something about this.
Well, I don't, I've never had anyone be like, that's not normal, up until the point, you know, where I was diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos not too long ago. That may be 4 years ago. But you know, I was experiencing, when I was playing soccer at a young age, I quickly experienced something called I was diagnosed with a deep bruise in my heel. And, I don't know if that's actually a real thing, but that's what I was given. And I was in a boot for like a year or two when I was like 9.
Wow.
And it was just this constant pain in my heel where any step I took, it felt like a knife going through the bottom of it. That was kind of my first like real long-term pain that stuck with me for a long time. And I don't really remember the pains other than that. I just remember always being in pain. Like at this point, I don't have like the ability to say, oh yeah, I remember that injury to such extent. I've experienced pain in every joint in my body at some point. And I can't really explain why or what I did for that, just because it's been so numerous.
Did you play a lot of sports like all through high school and college, or?
No, I actually... I played soccer, but I was kind of more like I played on the bench for the most part. I wasn't that great at it and wasn't that interested in it. So I played soccer from the time I was like 8 or so up through 15. And I had broken my arm playing goalie when I was 15. And I used that as a great scapegoat to stop playing soccer altogether. So I stopped at that age. And I've still had pain regardless of whether I played a sport or not.
And so you kind of brought up that you just recently, not long ago, were diagnosed with this Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Can you talk a little bit about what exactly that is? And does that have any connection, do you think, to why you've always felt so many pains?
Yeah, so Ehlers-Danlos, the specific form that I have is hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, which is a bit more common than people are realizing. And I was actually diagnosed with it because Katie saw how lanky and long my arms were, and she was concerned that I might have some Marfan's syndrome, kind of Marfanoid tendencies. And so I went to a geneticist to get checked and make sure I didn't have that, because those people, you know, they'll experience spontaneous ruptures of their aorta and just keel over and die, and, you know, that instant death. So I don't have that, but in the midst of being tested for all of that, it was determined that I have hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos specifically. And so what it is that all of the connective tissue in my body, from my eyes to my bones, my teeth, my skin, my muscles, everything has connective tissue in it, but my connective tissue is a bit more lax. It's stretchier. It doesn't rebound or recoil the same way that other people's connective tissue might. So the result is a system-wide effect on pain for the most part. If we're just talking about pain here, that, you know, inflammation can be greater. There can be more room for fluids to build up. It can take longer for things to get flushed out of the body. So inflammation can last longer for someone that has Ehlers-Danlos, and injuries can be very strange and spontaneous. Like there may be no real reason, although there could be some overuse or, you know, a sudden trauma that occurred. But the chances of injury are just very high with people who have Ehlers-Danlos. And in a lot of instances, that community wears a ton of braces. They've got elbow braces, knee braces, neck braces, back braces. And they're just always, where they're like, I wear 6 braces. How many do you wear? And they're like, I wear 4. You know, it's like this kind of, I have a bad term in my head right now. A measuring contest is the only thing I can think of for that. but, you know, so that community is very much focused on pain, and I didn't want to be involved in that kind of a community. I wanted to stand for something greater. So we teach people how to work with pain rather than covering it up and working against it. I think I went off topic a little bit there.
No,
not really.
Well, I'm curious too, because you've dealt with this pain, your entire life. I kind of have two questions, so prepare yourself. After soccer, because again, like, it didn't matter if you were in soccer, out of soccer, you continue to have pain. Did it make you want to stop moving altogether and just not move as much, become not become athletic? Like, did you have that desire to stop moving? And do you feel like this constant input of getting maybe more injury or more inflammation, do you think that over time the brain starts to become less sensitive to those pain responses and you start to receive pain less? Or do you think it didn't matter? You still always perceived it at the same level?
Cool. Yes. So if I don't move and I don't exercise, the pain is worse. It always has been. So I, you know, after soccer, I wasn't exercising as much. I would notice things would just crop up randomly, like my back, my upper back and neck. Those things were hurting because I was also a gamer. So I'd spend a lot of time at the computer and just my body really did conform to that C shape that I love to make fun of in my videos. I was that person and I was experiencing just a ton of aches constantly. So doing exercise, which I didn't really know how to do, but just moving and getting the heart rate up and strengthening some muscles, it would reduce it. I would still have injuries, but they weren't as numerous as they were if I didn't move. And that is still the case today. The second question was, whether or not you kind of get more desensitized to pain. I think that everyone has a different pain threshold. And working in the clinic back in the day with people and just massaging people, watching how different some people could tolerate, manual therapy, some touch and massage. It was very interesting to see some people that just like you'd barely touch them, they'd just be screaming. Yeah. And then other people, you could like stand on them with your knee and they'd make no noise, no sound. They're like, this doesn't, you're not getting in deep enough. And you're like, what? So it is interesting to look at. Pain is very subjective and it does depend on the person. And I think that the mindset around pain makes a difference. So for me, at this point, I know that pain is very much something that is helpful to me. Whereas if you're watching commercials, our whole society is very much about avoiding or covering up pain. You need to take medications. You need to wear this brace. You need to get this surgery to get rid of it. Whereas I have learned to use pain as a friendly messenger. It's telling me that I need to improve some way that I'm moving or improve mobility in an area to help reduce pain in that area. And that has been very beneficial for me and for our members, just to look at pain in a different way. And I guess as a result, I would say that pain is not something that hinders me in any way. I do experience it less now than I did, but I do still experience pains and it never scares me. I'm never afraid of pain, whereas a lot of people tend to be.
I think that's such an important message. And, you know, Jen talks about the whole pain as a messenger thing all the time. The yes, slightly aggressive, friendly messenger that is coming to just warn you, like, hey, you have to pay a little more attention to this part of your body, or you're not moving this nearly as much. I know that one instance that you were in a great deal of pain that we'd love to chat about is when you had a disc herniation and what kind of role that played in this whole journey.
Yeah, I think that was really the start of my movement understanding. Like, I'd worked out and I had a degree in kinesiology by the time that I had my disc injury, but I didn't really fully understand it. Like, you can have all of this knowledge, but if you're not really using it and putting it to the test, then do you really understand it? So I had this injury. I think I bulged my disc at the end of, you know, right after I graduated. And
how did it happen?
So for me, it was actually the last day of finals. And I was laying against my bed and I had a chest cold. And my coughs are aggressive. I absolutely, I'm like that guy that sneezes loudly and coughs loudly. I'm just obnoxious in that regard. So when I was studying for this last test, laying up against the wall in my bed, my back's all rounded, I coughed super hard and felt a pop in my lower back. And from that point forward, I had a ton of discomfort in my lower back. There was some pain leading up to that, like when I was doing my exercises. I did all the stupid stuff in the gym, like, you know, the sit-up machine where you like put your legs on the thing, you lay back and you're doing crunches and stuff. But I would hold like a barbell and do like rowing on it, like all kinds of stuff that didn't really, it wasn't the most effective exercise, but it looked cool. So there were things that led up to the injury. But that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And then 5 months after that, I actually herniated it at that point. Well, I think so. I was helping move my mom from one place to another. And about from that point till 2 years after, I had sciatica down both legs, a tremendous amount.
Both legs?
Both. Yeah. I had it was a 10 millimeter to my left. That was a herniation. And then it was also bulging to the right, 8 millimeters. So when I saw the MRI that he showed me, I laughed, and it was, I'm like, holy shit, this is not, ultimately I knew that I would overcome it. I don't know how I knew, but I just knew that it was going to happen. I did not want to go the surgical route. Three surgeons told me I should. And I had multiple PTs tell me that I should do it. And I didn't want to do it because my uncle's had 6 back surgeries and they have not helped him. And I've seen tons of patients have multiple back surgeries and they're still in pain. So I'm like, surgeries may be a solution, but in this instance, I have full control of my body. I haven't lost control of my bowels or my limbs or anything like that. So there's no emergency in that regard. I'm just experiencing, you know, the sciatica. I'm not losing, I don't have any numbness or tingling. So, you know, I don't feel that it's really that warranted, and I wanted to find a way to do it naturally. And I started with tons of medication, which wasn't natural. I took all of the things they said that were non-narcotic. And the first 3 to 4 months after my injury, my herniation, was an absolute blur. And I was still working with people in the clinic, and I would hobble in. I wasn't able to stand up straight. Using the bathroom in any capacity was brutal. So every time I had to go to the restroom, that was, it was a chore in and of itself, and usually was involved with tears. I didn't sleep. Any sleeping position was painful. So, and there, first of all, let me go back. The reason that going to the bathroom, so going number two, defecating, whatever, was painful is because, you know, if your diet isn't clean and you do end up having to push at all, it was pushing the fluid into the disc, which would increase sciatica down the legs. So just going poo was like a 10 out of 10 pain experience for me. And while I was on medications that constipate you, it was getting worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, that first few months was insane. I remember making a bunch of weed brownies and I ate like a ton of them and it did nothing. All it did was just make me smile while I was in pain. But, you know, I eventually just stopped taking the pills because I went through 1,000 ibuprofen in 3 months, which is also not good for your organs. And I did end up getting an injection in my spine, which worked 100%. I was 100% pain-free for a week. I wore a back brace during that time, limited motion of my spine, because they told me if I moved that it would push the fluid away and the inflammation would come back, which it did in full force. I went straight back to square one the following week. So then I just said, screw it. I'm going to do these 5 exercises that the PT gave me on a piece of paper, and I'm going to explore. And I did that for about a year until I met one of my patients was a CrossFit coach, And he said, you need to come to my gym. And I'm like, that is not a good idea. You're a CrossFitter. And he's like, no, I don't do CrossFit that way. So reluctantly, I went there. He analyzed my movement and just started laughing. Because for those of you that do know who I am, my channel and everything, I move really well. I can move all kinds, you know, my body parts individually very well. And I have a lot of control. That wasn't the case. When he analyzed me and I was doing my squats and stuff, I was the epitome of like what I make fun of in every capacity. So, you know, he taught me how to kind of neutralize things and keep things moving more rigidly, which was something that was really beneficial to me. And within a few months, I saw massive improvements and I actually started going to his CrossFit gym and doing just floor-based unweighted movements. And I learned a lot from that man. His name's Mike Koopman. He was a veteran as well. So, just like this total military guy, hardcore, you know, smiles very seldomly. And he helped me a tremendous amount. I've learned a lot from that man. So from there, I expanded on my knowledge and I taught lots of people in the clinic how to do the same thing and watch them also improve. And I was like, wow, this is great. I think I'm going a little bit off now.
No, but I mean, over a year, you were having pain like this.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was 2 years before the sciatica just stopped.
I just love how candid you are about the whole experience and how you're like, yeah, I did some of the things that I would definitely not recommend, you know, right now, the 1,000 ibuprofen or, you know, yes, getting the injection that gave some relief and then your experience with that coming right back. I mean, you did this thing up right, man. Most people only do one side and you had it on both, which is...
And most people would give up after a few months. Like if you're not feeling relief, I mean, I think that's incredible that your sciatica symptoms were pain related only and not the numbness, yes, tingling or weakness. I think that's a huge note to put in. However, to deal with that debilitating pain, at least in the very beginning, for 2 years, most people would not be able to sustain that.
Takes lots of resolve to go through that.
Well, I think that's where, you know, I've learned to really focus on the small wins. So for me, it was at the height of it, like the first 6 months of the injury was the worst. But for me to be able to be like, all right, I can bring my knee like a degree closer to my chest and it doesn't hurt as much, or I'm able to sleep, you know, 5-10 minutes longer each night and so on and so forth. It was those little tiny things that I latched onto because I saw that there was an improvement in the right direction. But I think people are often looking for like, well, I want to be able to go back to the gym and lift weights. Like that is a huge jump. I had to start with something small. And I think most people need to start with very small improvements whenever they want to make any change in their life, whether it's in regards to pain or a job or whatever. Yeah. So you've got to look at those tiny, tiny wins and latch onto them. Otherwise, you're going to give up.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned you had seen a PT, ended up giving you these 5 exercises. I kind of want to dissect that a little bit because you said, yeah, I took those 5 exercises and I explored. Like, what does that mean? What did these 5 exercises look like and how you explored through them? Were you still seeing the PT as you were, you know, doing that, or was it kind of more on your own?
So I had Kaiser Permanente at the time. I was under the age of 26 and still had my parents' insurance. So that was ideal for me. But I could only see the guy once every 2 months for 15
minutes.
Oh
my gosh.
Which, you know, that's Kaiser. And I had very good insurance and that's all I could get. So he gave me this piece of paper. He also told me I'm going to be needing to wear a back brace for the rest of my life. I'm going to need a lumbar support when I'm driving in the car, when I'm on a plane. And, you know, these are the exercises and this will probably be, you know, the first of many disc injuries that I'll have.
Oh, comforting.
That's good. My experience with PTs. The thing is that I went to you know, I was planning to go to PT school, and I went to multiple PT clinics during this time, and they were all very relatively the same way, not within Kaiser, but in multiple places, and they all kind of responded the same way. And I'm like, I'm not really interested in this kind of negativity. Mm-hmm. So that was one clue as to me not wanting to do what they were doing. I forgot my train of thought. I started talking negatively about PT.
Well, doing the five exercises.
Okay. I don't remember all of them. I know one of them was a bridge. One was a plank. There was one that had me laying on my side, almost kind of doing like a twist rotation type deal. Which was the most relieving thing that I was given. And that's actually the way that I was able to sleep, is in that side posture position with the knee, top knee bent, the bottom leg straight. And I'd have a pillow under that knee. And that was the best position that I could sleep. If I veered, you know, away from that position, it was, I'd wake up and be in pain and whatnot. But I don't remember the other two exercises, but it was funny, you know, the black and white sheet with just like this grainy picture of something.
The picture that, that 9 out of 10 people would not be able to decipher or do an exercise from accurately.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes, one of them was a press up, and that was one of my gauges for improvement, because I was able to get more and more into extension. Because for those, I don't know if you guys know this, but like extension with a disc herniation like that, pushing back, closing off the foramen and just pressing the herniation to a nerve just intensifies sciatica greatly. And when I started doing it, I could only press up the extent of just laying flat on the floor. So my face flat on against the floor was the most extension I could get, until I was able to get my arms under me. And then I was able to get into my elbows into like Sphinx pose. And then I was started to be able to press. And that whole process, the first 6 months, was one of my gauges of what I'm able to get into more extension without as much pain. Until the point where I was in so much extension that the bones were pressing into each other, and then I couldn't do extension anymore. So
max that one out. What's next?
Exactly. So then it became... Once I met that guy, Mike Koopman, learning to build strength was the biggest win for me after that initial phase that I went through.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And I appreciate even that you talk through, you know, the reality of initial positions and initial things that are going to be so hard along this journey as well. You know, like just telling someone to do a prone press up, some people might need a couple pillows underneath their hips and their back. And that is literally where they're starting.
Yeah.
You know, and the reality of how long, I mean, you said 6 months before you were really able to progress this. I think that is that reality check of what really is happening in the back, and how long that process can take is really important for people to start to like take in and absorb. What are some initial kind of like heavy hitters that you do recommend for people who might have been told you have a disc herniation, you're going to need to wear a back brace, or you're going to need to never lift again, or whatever it may be? Are there some initial things that you say, okay, at least do this every day?
You know, that's pelvic tilts for me, are definitely a go-to. That was one early on that I kind of started to explore, and was another thing that, you know, I would lay, I don't know, people would be watching. I was lived with a bunch of people. They'd be watching TV, and I'd just be on the floor always doing some sort of movement. Rather than just sitting there watching it, I was always doing some sort of movement. Pelvic tilts for me, and playing with all the different positions the pelvis could go into, was helpful. And it has been helpful for the thousands of people that I've taken through my programs. And I think that's a go-to place. It's very gentle. It gets some blood flow into the area, can help to improve range of motion, and it's a good start. Then I would say kind of learning how to hinge with a bit more of a neutral spine. Mm-hmm. I know that there's currently this battle between people about neutral spine being unhealthy and, you know, or neutral spine's important and whatever. But right after an injury, I think it can be very helpful to just be able to move and do things in your life without pain. And a neutral spine allows for that. So learning how to hinge and sit your butt back to pick things up and squat with as little pain as possible, I think is important, because you're going to have to still live your life. You can't just sit around and not move around. So getting people to do things in their life that aren't as painful is a go-to. So I'd say those two things. And, you know, people are like, wait, I shouldn't be deadlifting. Well, deadlifting is an essential part of our life. We pick things up. So if you can learn how to do that and do it moderately well, then you're going to feel a lot better as a result. And that's not something I was taught early on.
Yeah. And I like how you kind of touched on quick how there's like this paradigm, or you need to be on one side or the other when it comes to, oh, is neutral spine, you know, and standing with, quote, perfect posture important, or doing movements with perfect mechanics important, or does the quality of the movement not matter as much, or is it not related to the pain and injury? And I hate that it's only two options, right? I hate that people act like, oh yeah, it's one or the other. Well, no, let's choose a person and see what their tendencies are and then try to apply all of the principles to them. Because, I mean, like you mentioned, when people see you move now, you move incredibly. You still have incredible range of motion in all of your joints, but you've started to learn, and I think this is what you're talking about, picking up from this CrossFit Mike gentleman, you started to learn how to actually control within all of this incredible range that you had.
Yeah, and I mean, it was, that's the other thing about Ehlers-Danlos, kind of going back to that. People have a ton of flexibility, and flexibility is great, but if you have too much flexibility, like my shoulder flexion is insane. And the problem with my shoulder flexion being so good, shoulder flexion would be bringing your arm up overhead and behind you for those listening. My shoulder flexion would be so good that I'd have like a weight over my head, and my arm would just be resting back into my joint. And I didn't know that. People that have Ehlers-Danlos will end up letting their joints kind of rest in this end range position, which can in turn create pain or inflammation or tears in the joint even. So, you know, learning to build strength in that end range and learning to kind of not fall into your joints was a huge step for me. And it is for a lot of people that have that condition. So, you know, I have a ton of range of motion, and it is great to have that range of motion, but I also need to be able to stabilize and make it, you know, more strong in a neutral position, which, you know, there's people on both ends of the spectrum. You see guys that can, you know, squat 800 pounds, they're not flexible, and they're on the opposite end of the spectrum. They're probably the quote tighter individual, and they're stronger as a result. Well, when you get someone like me squatting 350 pounds, my joints go all over the place. My hips want to move around, my knees want to move around, my ankles, my spine, like things just kind of fall apart. I have a loss of rigidity throughout my torso and the rest of my body. So kind of learning that there's a spectrum. You've got super tight on one end, you've got super flexible on the other. And you kind of want to meet in the middle and play with both ends of the spectrum here and there. And it's not just choosing one or the other. It's utilizing the whole range at certain points, depending on the task at hand and what your goal is.
And that's huge. And that's where it's so necessary to be guided by someone. And if you're not having eyes on you to tell you what even your basic bridge position might look like, or a bird dog, or, you know, all these different exercises, how do you know how you can change it up? How do you know if you're going into your end range and having a lack of control if you're not guided by someone? And that's where I think the dangers, not dangers, I will say, but the lack of support on social media comes from, again, they can look at all of our pages and take certain things away, but the lack of guidance that you might get is there's going to be a stopping point to how far you can go.
It makes it difficult to understand where your own tendencies and biases lie. Because myself, I was going through PT school. I had no clue where some of my biggest weaknesses were until I came out to LA and met all these people who were the top of the top movers. And I'm like, oh shit, I'd suck at movement.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of different opinions and conflicting opinions. And they're, you know, a lot of the different pages are very matter of fact. And I think when it comes to social media, there's a little bit of, you know, clickbaiting people if you want your page to do any sort of good. So, you know, it's like finding this balance between clickbaiting people, but also giving them education that they're interested in and that's that's entertaining, but not so much that you're like telling them that there's no other way to do something. And that really confuses them. There's a follower that's been following us for, I don't know, 6 years. His name is Too Shredded. No picture. Don't know anything. He follows everybody on the spectrum and he's always confused. He's like, but this person says this. It's like, dude. And so people are definitely out there just getting lost and confused by it all.
Oh, yeah. And I think, and I know we're going to touch into it, but your programming and what you guys do to really help walk people through from those basics to, you know, progressing a little bit further, getting that detailed guidance, that detailed cueing, continuing to explore and having feedback in the body is necessary beyond social media. So I do hope that people continue to explore beyond, and it's okay to explore in different realms of belief. Like, that's okay. See what works for your body. Like, I'm all about that as a PT, you know, take different courses, see what people, what people are saying and what makes sense within working with an actual body. And I do want to get into, before we wrap too, I know that mindfulness, you say, is a big part of your passion and your practice. Now, I know a lot of people can define that differently. How do you define mindfulness and how does that play a role in your continued pain experience?
You know, everyone's got to figure out what works for them when it comes to mindfulness. So for me, you know, I think when people think of mindfulness, they'll think of meditation. Meditation is not something that I have latched onto and been able to sustain it for long periods of time. I've done it in small bouts here and there, but it's never something that I've been able to continue to do. And, you know, writing things down, journaling, I did that for a year until it just kind of fell off and didn't really notice too much of a benefit from that. But for me, once I started diving into some of the Stoicism books, there's a guy named Ryan Holiday who writes several books kind of like Ego is the Enemy and The Obstacle is the Path. He basically takes all of the ancient Stoic philosophy and compiles them into books. And when I started, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that guy. Are you?
I haven't read any of the books, but I've seen his stuff around.
But I'm not necessarily a fan of him. He kind of gives me strange vibes, but I love the work that he's done, and that kind of active thinking, basically instead of reacting to things, you're constantly stepping back, you're analyzing the situation, and you're either reacting with really just the thing that is the most mature, if you will, rather than just kind of getting upset with things. So for me, it's looking at life. I'm doing a very terrible job of explaining this.
No, keep going.
A lot of times I explained this on a podcast last week and I was like, this isn't right. it's difficult to explain in that I guess I used to be very reactive, and for me, it's looking at things, and not being so aggressive with my responses for things, and just taking back and analyzing the situations. And that's been really helpful for me in regards to not just business and relationships, but also with pain. So when it comes to pain, it's like, what is this teaching me, and what are the things that I can listen to, and how can it guide me? Anytime that we get upset with something in our lives, it's an opportunity for us to grow. That is an instance where you're confronted with something. And if you're ever upset, it's never because of the thing that upset you. It's because of something within yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's an opportunity for you to work on something within yourself. And in that regard, it's very, the Stoic approach is very active, in that you're now sitting there trying to figure out and dig deep. Understand, why am I upset about this thing that someone said? Why am I, quote, triggered? Why am I feeling like a Karen right now? And the truth of the matter is that it is, every time you're upset or every time you're happy, it is within yourself, and to understand why that is happening in the first place. And a lot of people try to change other people. And in this world of social media, I think it's very important for people to understand how to do this and analyze their own thoughts, because any stress that we're getting from social media is going to carry over to every other aspect of our life as well.
Oh, everything. And I just like the thing that kind of reminds me of is being able to find a way to respond in a situation rather than react. And I like even thinking about that, as you said, in relation to pain. How do I respond to the pain that I'm experiencing rather than reacting and trying to fight and cover it up and get rid of these symptoms? Like, it's going to be a part of life.
Yeah. And I guess another thing when it comes to mindfulness is finding that thing that recharges you and that you're able to play. We tend to work a lot. At least in the United States, we find ourselves working quite a bit. And I think it's important to get into that state of play, even if you are having pain, doing something that allows you to feel like you're not trying to achieve something. And that's what Brené Brown's research shows, that like, you need to get into that state where you're not playing a game with the family because you're trying to make sure the family's together. You need to play something or watch something or do something that literally has no end goal. It's just something that you love to do, that you enjoy, that you could just, what we call, absorb. We just absorb information or whatever it is that allows you to be playful. And that can be incredibly recharging for people, and for you to feel like you can go back into the next, work week and whatnot, and tackle it. And if you're not doing that, then that's going to have side effects.
Totally. And I honestly think you hit on so many amazing aspects of mindfulness and what that means within a topic that's so difficult to describe, because what you said right away, everyone has to find out what works for them. And someone like you, like, I've really loved learning about different Stoic principles as well, because I can relate to that in a way where some other people might find their ability to have that kind of mindful contemplation on how they react or thoughtfully respond to the world around them through things like breath work, or you mentioned meditation or journaling, or there's so many ways to explore this mindful practice by yourself so that you can then go try implementing it in your life and how you react in certain environmental conditions. And then to what you said right there, where do you find play? Where do you find that thing that doesn't have that sympathetic fight or flight nervous system end game and just allows you to relax into your body a little bit more? I think that's
exactly
so important. I think everything you said, and there's so many nerdy neurological principles that we could dive into on why that's important for your health, which is why I love that you incorporate that so much in your programming within Wealth, or is it Wealth? That's Wealth with an H. Where can people find out more about Wealth and what y'all do?
Yeah, so the website is Spread Wealth. That's Spread W Health, or Spread Whole Health, whatever. And then the Instagram page is same way, Spread Wealth. Those are the two things. We have TikTok, and I think that's Wealth_. And then there's my personal page, the.shirtlessdude on Instagram.
Yep. Yep. I mean, so many incredible places for people to continue to learn from you too, and hopefully go beyond the social medias and dive a little bit deeper into the work. And it is work. It's continued work. And you're an example of that, continuing to say, listen, the pain unfortunately doesn't end. You work with it.
Yes. That's, yeah, we did touch on that, right? I do experience pain still. And it's not as frequent, and it's not something that hinders me or stops me.
Which we can clearly see from the dot shirtless dude.
Yeah. And honestly, just thanks for coming and taking the time and sharing your journey from 5-year-old heel pain all the way to now. It's pretty incredible what you've been doing within yourself and the development you keep working on, and how you're now, you know, spreading that on to thousands more people.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me again.
Every time I hear Andrew's story, I'm just continued to be blown away. I feel like I learn something new every single time. And he's such an incredible person to watch along this journey of movement. So please go follow him. And don't forget that we actually just started the Move to Improve Challenge, which has been absolutely epic to see people coming in, self-assessing their bodies, understanding their bodies, and starting to move and learn. I'm so excited for this month. There's still time to get in. This is the last possible week to get in. So if you haven't, please head down to the show notes, click the link, and join the Move to Improve Challenge. It's going to be epic place to continue to learn about your body, get back into the basics, and move, as Andrew says. Thanks for joining us on another podcast, and we hope to see you back next time.